Mark Woods, and I'm back with another Page One podcast, and today we're doing a Facebook Live. That's how multimedia we are. I don't know that I am. This is like juggling. We'll try and make it work, but Andrew can make these things happen. I'm with Andrew Pentazzi and David Bauerlein. Have both of them here today because of a story you had in Sunday's paper, story that ran with the headline, Making Jacksonville a Safer City. And I was thinking about it, how there's some issues that we disagree about, people disagree about, but we often have, we agree about the goal. And I think this is one of them where I think everybody would say they want a safe city. And, you know, a large majority of the people, of people in Jacksonville will probably say we want it to be safer. But how we get there is where the disagreements come in. So before we get to the how we get there, maybe you guys can talk about where we are right now.
So the story we wrote basically was looking at this problem that I think we use the word intractable. This problem's been around for many, many, many years, if not decades. Obviously, every time there's a city election, there's an opportunity for people to come forward and say, if elected, here's what I would do, because you're going to have a four-year term, and we all know that these are not quick-fix problems. It's going to take a systemic, lasting impact in order to turn it around. So this was the first of a number of issue series that we're going to do for the election. And obviously crime, public safety, every time is high on voters' minds. Certainly this time around, it's one that the challenger, Anna Brochet, is making a big issue in the campaign against the mayor, Lenny Curry. Just as 4 years ago, he made it a big issue against then-mayor Alvin Brown. So this was a chance to kind of let both candidates, as long as the two other mayor candidates and the sheriff candidates, speak their piece and say, what would they do if they had the power to really try and put something in effect that would change things?
Right, and you led off by saying there's, in the first 6 weeks of 2019, JSO already investigating 18 murders, and last Thursday, Powell Park, 24-year-old and a 14-year-old killed. You had a great quote from this Jacksonville resident, Tina Jones, at a task force meeting that said, we must change the channel and stop burying them, holding hands, carrying roses, raising doves and balloons, and said, what are we going to do? So, I guess, Andrew, explain what you would add to what David said about where we are and where we go from here.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with David, and we use the word intractable because even when Duval County has had decreases in our murder rate, it's not as severe as is seen elsewhere. We still are lagging. Things are certainly safer than they were in the 1980s when Jacksonville just had a massive amount of murders. Almost 199 murders in 1989 with a population that was nearly half. So things are better than they were then. Mm-hmm. The difference is things are even way better in other counties. And kind of this is a question that comes up in every election, which is why isn't Jacksonville doing as well as, say, Hillsborough County or Broward County or Pinellas County or any of these, you know, similar areas in Florida that have experienced even sharper crime reductions. So there have been a number of strategies that have been put in place. 4 years ago, Lenny Curry campaigned on a promise of adding more police officers. And he likes to point out that he added 180 positions to the budget. The city has also, in a cooperative effort with the sheriff and the state attorney, as well as the city, tried to do call-ins with people who are suspected of being in gangs. They've tried doing various different things. And the state attorney's office has really taken a lead approach on putting together a report of potential options for the city going forward. What's different today from 4 years ago, and David covers city government more, so he can speak to this, is 4 years ago, there was a very simplistic solution presented. When Lenny Curry first ran 4 years ago, he said, there is an enormous problem of violence in our streets, and the solution is hire more police officers and restore funding cuts to the Jacksonville Journey. He's done those things. But the violent crime, actually, if you average during his 3 years that we have data for, compared to the 4 years of Alvin Brown, it's actually worse. The murder rate is, and the violent crime rate is the same. And so now I think what's different is we're not getting the same pat answers, the same simplistic, well, if we just do this one thing, crime will go down. Instead, both Lenny Curry as well as his challenger seem to be taking a more complex position, which is that there's not just a clear correlation. If we do this, crime will go down. Lenny Curry said at an editorial board meeting with us, actually, that this was one of the things that keeps him up at night, that there's not one vote that can be taken that he knows will stop murders. And so it's hard. And that's true. There's not one thing that can be guaranteed. But it still begs the question, why is Jacksonville so far behind when so many other cities have experienced drastic reductions? It's not a one-off year. It's not like this is a blip, like 2018 was particularly violent. In fact, our murder rate is fairly stable where it's at, about 12 murders per 100,000 people, and it's not changing. And really, I can't begin to tell you what the right solution is as a journalist, but we just kind of wanted to explore what are those possible answers.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you had a stat in there, that Alvin Brown during his 4 years, the average was 92 murders a year, and Lenny Curry so far during 3 years, I believe, average 108 per year. So yeah, that to me illustrates how it hasn't gone down. I know he probably would argue, well, as politicians usually do, that they have some spillover from whatever happened before them. So what does he want to do if reelected?
So in terms of police, hiring more police, that does not sound like that's something that's really anybody is actively pushing at this point. They did hire a lot of police. It feels like a lot of the attention now is on the prevention intervention. So he's talked about something called Cure Violence, which is something the state attorney, Melissa Nelson, brought to his attention, which is a national program. It's been tested, seems to get results. And the idea is that you have people who are from the community who can go out and talk directly to those who are in situations where they might be likely or prone to do something of a violent nature. An example would be if you have a drive-by shooting and somebody is killed or injured in a drive-by shooting. That might then spawn a retaliation shooting. So you have people who try and get in there to kind of curb, stop that violence from spreading, where it just sort of feeds off itself. And if you start to stop that from happening, then the idea is it's similar to stopping an actual health epidemic. You cut off the transmission of the illness, and then that allows the community to heal from it. So that's something that they're going to have some people come in from the Cure Violence organization, I think starting Tuesday of this week. They'll be starting to look at it. He is not committed to saying, yes, he's absolutely going to do it, but he sounded like he's very interested in the program and said it was likely that something like that would be enacted by the city.
Yeah, the story you said, he's so far unwilling to commit to any specific proposals. Is that correct?
Right, and that was a good example, one where he actually has gone out and is paying the money for the people from Cure Violence to come in through the city budget, but he has not committed to it. So, yes, there's a long list of potential things that possibly could get done. At this point, he's not committed for sure to doing any of them if he's reelected to a second term.
Yeah, and if I can just go on with that, there's basically two programs simultaneously the city's looking at. One is already implemented, and it comes out of the John Jay College at the City University of New York. And that really focuses more on policing. So that's where you get the gang call-ins. They get people who are on probation who are suspected of being gang members. They have them come for a meeting with police and prosecutors there, and they kind of emphasize there's a carrot and there's a stick. We can get you social services. We can try to get you a job, or we're going to come after you. Then they go door to door and they knock and they try to get family members of the people who they think are responsible for violence. And they try to tell them, you need to intervene in this person's life and you need to make a difference. And that's one model. Cure Violence is different in that it engages community members. It's hiring basically community members to be violence interrupters. In fact, it's often trying to hire the people who they think have been violent in the past. It's trying to find who are the people who have the most credibility in the community rather than a police-first approach. I did talk to academic experts who said the two programs can work together at the same time. They're not in conflict, but they're trying to accomplish the same goal, which is identify violence like a public health structure. Think of it as an epidemic. Where is the virus starting, and where can we cut it off, and how can we intervene? So far, the city has pledged $7,500 just for a first assessment. These programs can be expensive. One of the proposals the state attorney's office put forward was a city office of violence prevention, which other cities have done. I think Philadelphia has one. Minneapolis has one. And these offices can cost a lot of money. And if you look in Minneapolis, they took money from the police budget and put it into this office, which I think is situated under the Department of Health, to try to delineate. They're trying to take a public health approach in addition to a policing approach, but that they're kind of separated. Already, the sheriff would point to what he's done in the last 4 years, the civil citations, that he's allowed for more juvenile civil citations, that they've tried to emphasize diversion more than the previous sheriff did, and that he is fully invested in the John Jay program, and he thinks it will have an impact. But these do have delayed results. Any academic you talk to will say, you're not going to get the results right away. There's almost a feeling of someone else might, you know, we'll know later on whether something is successful or not. So Alvin Brown having a lower murder rate doesn't necessarily mean Alvin Brown's programs worked. It might mean John Payton's programs worked. We could never really know what the impact is going to be. And that makes it even harder because as a politician, you're running on a four-year cycle. So you want something that can deliver results right away. And being able to point to something like we hired 180 police officers is easier to point to than saying we invested in a program that, trust me, 10 years down the road, you're going to really enjoy, but you're not going to see the benefits until then.
Right. Seems like we tend to do that with a lot of different things. I remember for a while, literacy was this huge issue in town that we were going to make a big push. And that's not the kind of thing that you see overnight results if you're emphasizing that with, you know, pre-K or even if you're emphasizing with adults, but it seemed like a very important issue. And I know it is still to a lot of people, but you don't hear it emphasized the way it was. And that's not the kind of thing you see turned around overnight. And murder rate, a lot of our big issues, that takes time. You touched on this just very briefly, the main challenger, Anna Brochet. She said her big question she's asking voters is, do you feel safer today than you did 4 years ago? Which is essentially the question that Lenny Curry was asking 4 years ago voters to answer. What would she do differently? What does she say she would do differently than Mayor Curry?
Yeah, the two main takeaways that I got from her talk about what she'd do differently is, number one, she talks about doing a lot of the things that are already being done in the terms of early childhood, after-school programs, job training, youth and prevention programs. She has put on the table as something that she would consider a potential if it would be needed in order to be able to provide the kind of financial resources to really expand those programs, which would be to do something this community has not done since 1990, which is put a referendum to ask the voters of Duval County, do you want to enact a tax that the proceeds would be dedicated to one thing and one thing only, that would be go to child youth intervention and prevention programs. So that is something different, something that I've not heard any candidate put forward before as being something they would be open to doing. So that's one thing that kind of distinguishes her from Curry, who has said he is opposed to any new tax. But would want to work within existing resources to be able to find the right funding mix for these programs. The other thing she talked about is something that, in a way, it seems like a little bit of a theme in terms of this idea of trying to find people in the community to act in concert with the city, which is she's talked about taking the city's GIS mapping system and census data and creating this incredibly detailed map of the city down to the street level. and also go in and identify in each of those communities down to the street level, if possible, who are the people who are already there, who are neighborhood leaders, who are business leaders, the people who are perhaps already talking to troubled youth in the communities. Find ways to support them, and they would be kind of, quote, the front line of the city's fight against crime. So in some ways, it's similar to what the Cure Violence approach is, except it wouldn't just be intervening if there's a potential violent situation about to happen. It would be helping support on a much, on an everyday basis, these people who are in the community already, who are already respected, and people who are perhaps more likely to engender trust from within the community than, say, the police or city officials are. So I think she said it's something that Milwaukee has done in some similar fashion. She toured and visited that. So that's something new that would be different if it could actually be set up and put in place in Jacksonville.
That's, you mentioned a couple cities as we talked about that. That was one thing I was going to ask. Has anybody found kind of this, I know there's no magic solution, but has anybody found ideas that seem to be dramatically changing in a city similar to Jacksonville, maybe, that sometimes it's hard to compare? You know, I think if we compare a really small city or a New York City, it's different. But is there a city with a similar size population and demographics to ours where they've dramatically changed their murder rate?
There have been a lot of cities that have experimented in a lot of ways that have seen murder reductions, but the challenge in looking at those cities, which is going to be the same if this is successful, if we implement a lot of these proposals that State Attorney Melissa Nelson suggested in this plan, and then we do see a reduction in murder rate and people look at us, everyone's going to see what they want to see, which is someone might come along and say, it's because you implemented an Office of Violence Prevention. Someone else is going to come along and say, it's because you hired more police officers. Someone else is going to come along and say, it's because you did Cure Violence. And someone's going to say, no, it's not Cure Violence. It's the John Jay program. Everyone is doing everything they can, which is great. We want public officials to try a lot of different things. But it makes it sometimes hard to apply academic rigor to trying to identify what's the control group, what actually had an impact. Can we really know what it was that was making a difference? Did New York City experience crime reduction primarily because of gentrification, or primarily because of stop and frisk, or primarily because they moved from place-based to people-based policing, which is a big debate? Like, they were trying so many different things at once that New York City is the big what everyone looks at as, you know, the true success story, because they have such a low murder rate. And it's hard to know. I mean, some people are going to look at New York City and say it's purely because of the gun laws, that they are much stricter on their gun control in New York City than elsewhere. Other people are going to see something else. And I think the same thing will happen here. And it's the same thing with what policy proposal you pick. You can kind of make any proposal look like it is solely responsible if you want to, when the truth of the matter is we really don't know exactly what it is, and it's probably right to try a number of different things all at once.
I was going to say, there's one city that's very similar to Jacksonville that had good success a few years ago, and that is the city of Jacksonville, because the city actually put in place the Jacksonville Journey when John Payton was mayor. So this would have been at a time where there was this upsurge in crime, far worse in terms of the total number of violent crimes and the rate of increase. City came together, put together this combination of stepped up law enforcement along with rolling out some youth intervention prevention programs. And the results seemed to work. There was a reduction in the number of murders, a reduction in violent crime for 2-3 years. Then it started to go back up. And you might say, well, that's the time then to redouble your efforts because it was working. Well, the city ran into the financial fallout from the Great Recession. There was a real shortage of funding. They were looking at ways, you know, they had to cut stuff across the board. So there just wasn't the money to redouble that effort. So that's one model that might work. You know, look at doing something like that. The law enforcement is about the level it was in terms of Jack's journey. There has been an increase in prevention and intervention. Is it enough? I mean, the city never achieved the five-year goal the Jacksonville Journey had for funding those youth programs and mm-hmm. also those adult programs to help offenders reintegrate to the community. So the prevention and intervention part is yet to be fully tried at the level that the Jacksonville Journey organizers said the city really needed to do.
And one thing that the mayor said during our interview, he put out a hypothetical of, I forget how much it was, I think it was $50 million. He said, do you really think that putting $50 million extra dollars into what's called the Kids Hope Alliance, it's our coordinated...
I think he said $40
million. But. Or $40 million, that do you think that that would be the best use of resources? Like, would that be the best return on investment? And he said he did not think so. Now, he didn't say we shouldn't increase the budget at all, but he was trying to indicate that he felt like there needs to be multiple programs. He specifically talked about alternative schools, which in Jacksonville, those are the schools that the most problematic at-risk students sometimes go to. They're the places that try to get someone graduated who is having trouble in a traditional school. And he was talking about the need to put more services in those schools as one example of something he'd like to look at in his next 4 years.
And one point you mentioned comparing this to a health issue, an epidemic, and I was thinking about how last year, I don't remember the exact name of the annual gathering of local health officials, and it brings in people nationally. And their issue last year, they focused on food deserts. This year was on guns, and they wanted, and this kind of gets back to the start of this, that we all want a safer thing, but there's certain ways that we disagree on. That seems to be a classic example of gun control, not gun control. They were advocating for more studying of guns. They said we have not studied gun violence in America in general the way we need to, just to figure out how can we make it safer. Is that anything that's come up in this debate?
It hasn't come up this time, but when Alvin Brown was elected, and this is where partisan labels in Jacksonville really don't mean the same thing they do on a national level. So John Payton was a Republican who I think most anyone would say was a conservative Republican. But when he was mayor, he was a part of the Mike Bloomberg coalition of mayors to end gun violence, which a lot of conservatives usually really hate. Alvin Brown, a Democrat, got elected, and one of the early things he did in his term was he withdrew Jacksonville from the coalition of mayors to end gun violence. And there's been no appetite I've seen among the candidates to talk about guns as a root cause of the violence here.
And I'm not sure in Florida whether, quite frankly, cities are able to enact their own gun control legislation the way they are in some other parts of the country. So it's basically something like what John Payton did, which was ally yourself with like-minded people who would like to change the laws at the state and federal level. There's no nothing that I'm aware of where that's being studied or pushed. Although, when you look at the statistics, it really is true that Jacksonville has a violent crime problem, but one criminologist pointed out to me, you really have a violent gun problem. That's really where Jacksonville stands out compared to other cities.
And I will say this about the sheriff's office, because they have made guns a focus. Their big focus has been on guns that get stolen.
Yeah.
That children, which children can't walk into a store and buy a gun anyway, but children very easily have access to guns, partly through, according to the sheriff's office, partly through cars where they can see the guns inside the car and the car is unlocked. And so the sheriff's office has had a vigorous social media campaign to get people to lock up their guns and lock up their vehicles to stop that access to firearms. I know other cities have seen firearms have gotten larger caliber and more powerful than they used to, the firearms that are seized. I don't know if that's true in Jacksonville as well. But I would agree. I think that in Florida and in Jacksonville, we would be limited in what types of regulations can be passed. And so with John Payton being a part of the coalition, that was more of a note to the federal government. And that was also a pre-DC versus Heller, where the national climate on gun control was very different.
So we've mentioned a bit about the sheriff, mayoral race, but obviously there's a lot of other folks involved. So maybe natural to kind of wrap up with the task force and what else is being done by others in the city, and where what is the task force with what 243 people on it now? what is it, 43 people, I think?
It's got 42 people.
42,
right?
Okay.
So maybe they'll deadlock 21-21 on their recommendations. Yeah. Well, there is a task force that Aaron Bowman, the city council president, pulled together. It's really heavily comes from people who are already in the community. There's only two city council members on it, so it's going to have a good cross-section of voices. They're supposed to have some recommendations, I think, in May on what to do now. And they are really looking at not the law enforcement side. They're saying, what can we do outside of law enforcement to try and correct this problem over the long term? So their recommendations should be interesting. Some people say, well, this is just going to be Jacksonville Journey all over again. It may have some similarities to Jacksonville Journey, but there's some things they've talked about that weren't in the Journey in terms of job training is something that could be different. They may come out with some specific funding recommendations, which would be different from what we have, at least in front of us now.
I was going to say, it always costs money, which is where the great ideas, but we run into that.
That's right, exactly. There's also, I think, the state attorney's office is doing has a juvenile justice task force, which could have some interesting recommendations coming out of it. Then there's a cure violence study, which should have some interesting recommendations out of that. I personally think studies are good. I don't think there's anything wrong with having this kind of community debate. The implementation's the thing, and whether, you know, you have so many recommendations that just a few are done, and then everybody moves on to the next issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know some people have pointed to the fact that there were studies done 10 years ago and even older than that. I would say the national climate is different. For example, the way gangs are organized today are very different from the way gangs were back then. They are very horizontal. It's peer-to-peer. It's not, you know, hierarchical in structure. Access to guns is different than it was 10 years ago. I think it's important, like David said, to do these studies, but it's also easy to do a study and gain some political cover. It's easy to say, you know, we're looking at cure violence and we're interested in what they have to say. But then when push comes to shove, when the next budget comes out after the election is over, to say it's just too costly and it's not our best use of resources. So are you going to actually follow through and do the hard decisions? And one thing that Lenny Curry did make clear is he will not support any tax increase of any kind, whether it's a tax dedicated to children's services or elsewise, that he does not support any tax increase. So that gives us at least that idea of kind of the limitation. So anything that is enacted is going to have to take money from somewhere else or be the result of rising property tax revenue.
Exactly. Well, great. Obviously, this is a topic that unfortunately isn't going away. Important one, and that you guys will both be covering. So thanks to David Bauerlein and Andrew Pantazzi for being here both on a podcast and Facebook Live. So what are we going to attempt next time? Throw one more thing to juggle. No, but thanks for being here, and thanks for your coverage.
Thanks for the questions, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.